We're doing the Yaakov. We're in the middle of a long speech. The Talmud had brought us to Rabbi Tanhum from the city of Noi, who was speaking before the masses, and they asked him, can you put out a light, can you put out a flame on behalf of someone who is very ill on Shabbos? And obviously his answer is going to be that if someone is deathly ill and they need the darkness in order to sleep and in order to get better, then for the sake of someone, pikuach nefesh, we do put out a light on Shabbos. And there can be instances where it is pikuach nefesh. That's going to be his obvious answer, but he doesn't say that. He goes off on a long speech, which shows us a little bit about how the rabbis used to speak and probably still do to some degree. And that is giving a lot of stories and a lot of ethics of Torah from using the oratory skills that they have in order to convey many messages aside from the point they're making. And so he starts off on a tangent and he says, "Where are you, Solomon? Where is your wisdom? Isn't it enough that you contradicted your father? You have to contradict yourself too. Here you go saying... You say, I praise the dead. Your father said the dead can't give praise. What are you praising them for? Then you yourself say it's better to be a living dog than a dead lion. So you're not praising the dead, are you? So what are we talking about?" Then he said, praising the dead is talking about the forefathers, that their merits are so worthy, even more than those that are living. Or he's praising Moshe Rabbeinu, who makes institutions and they're still around. So he's praising, he's saying, look, where do you find someone like this? A king makes a decree, barely anyone wants to listen to him while he's living, certainly not after he's dead. And here Moshe's deceased, and yet his decrees are being followed. Davar acher, an alternate interpretation, Meshabech ani et hameitim. We're on page Yud in the standard editions, which is Daf Lamed in the Talmud. Another understanding, v'shabech ani et hametim, when King Solomon said, "I praise those that are deceased," k'd Rav Yehuda amar Rav, that goes in line with the way Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, "May dichtiv asei mi'ot letova v'irusonai v'yevoshu." What does the verse mean when King David asks God, "I want you to make a sign, a good sign on my behalf, my enemies should see it and be shamed." So King David asks God for a sign, and he's asking that through this sign his enemies be shamed. What's he asking for? Amal David lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. King David says before God, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the worlds, Mecholi al oto avon. I ask forgiveness after all the work I've done in repenting. Forgive me for the sin with Bathsheba. So we know King David sinned in his relationship with the young girl Bathsheba, who was a minor. She was a married woman, and then technically she was divorced, and we know there was a desecration of God's name. So he asks for forgiveness for that sin. And towards the end of his life, God tells him, Amalo machulach, okay, forgiven. Amalo aseimi ot bechayai. So David says, God, give me a sign while I'm still living. Let everyone see that you've forgiven me, because right now everyone thinks that I have no portion in the world to come, and I'm such a bad person after what I've done. God says, no. In your lifetime, I'm not going to make it known that I've forgiven you. No. But when your son Solomon will be king, in his lifetime, I'll make it known that I forgave you. When King Solomon built the temple, they wanted to bring the ark into the Holy of Holies. The only problem was that the gate it had to enter through was exactly the width of the ark. So the ark couldn't fit through. Whoops! What do we do now? Lift it over? Davku sharin zebazet. So the gates of the temple clang shut, and as much as they tried opening them, they wouldn't open. So they're standing there, they need to enter the temple, and some miraculous thing happens. They can't get the gates open. Amar Shlomo slim albarinanot velo nana. King Solomon sings out 24 terms of praise in request that the gates be opened, and nothing works. And then Patach ve'amar, he opened it, he began and said the following: Su she'arim rashechem yinasu b'tchei olam ve'yavo melech ha'kavod. Gates open, and may the openings of the world be open as the King of Honor should enter. Ratu b'tchei le'mivlei. So the gates started bending towards Solomon as though they were going to crash on him and destroy him. Amru miuze melech hakavod. It was as if the gates were saying, "Who are you calling King of Honor? You think you're the King of Honor?" Amar lehu, Hashem izos v'gibor. Solomon said, "I wasn't talking about me. I was talking about God. I need you to open for this is God's honor, not my honor. I said open in the honor of the King of Honor. That's not me. That's God." Chazal v'amar su sharim hashechem su b'tchei olam v'yavo melech hakavod miuze melech hakavod Hashem tzvakot melech hakavod tzela. He says, "Okay, gates, open up. I want you to open in the honor of the King of Honor. Who is the King of Honor? Hashem, who controls all armies. He is the King of Honor for eternity." V'lo nana, doesn't work. The gates aren't opening. He asked, even in God's honor, they're not opening. Shneimar, kivan she'amar, but once he said, Hashem Elokim al tashev pnei mishichecha, Hashem, our God, please don't turn back the one that you anointed. Zachra lechasdei David avdecha. Remember the kindness of David, your servant. Miad nana. He says that and the gates fling open. Now, this sounds like a fantastic story. There was a man who did not accept too much of Jewish tradition. Could be at one point in his life he did. His name was Josephus Flavius. And he wrote a history book. The Romans commissioned him to write the history of the wars, and then he expanded it to the history of the Jews. And when he recounts the years preceding the destruction of the temple, he writes over there that something happened. He says there was a cosmic thing that happened just before the destruction of the temple. I don't remember, sometime within the 3 years preceding the destruction, they saw like a comet flying right over the temple, something like that. And he says that another thing that happened was that the gates opened and they couldn't shut them. There was this eerie thing that the gates of the temple flung open, and as much as they tried, they couldn't get them closed. So they'd bring in blacksmith, they'd bring in professionals, nothing worked. And they realized this was the hand of heaven. There was a message here. It's as though God was saying, "I'm out, and the enemies can come in. The temple is not closing its doors anymore." So even Josephus, who gives all kinds of logical explanations to a lot of things that our sages said miraculous, on this Josephus writes, there was a miracle there. At that time, so King David's enemies, their faces changed colors. They turned red, they turned black, because here they were saying all along that King David was worthless, and now here, God wouldn't open the gates until King David's name was mentioned. Who were David's enemies? So, it's interesting. Do we have a Gemara Shabbos? No. Okay. Okay. The Rashi over here writes, it was the family of Saul. It was the family of Shimei. It was those relatives. David had enemies from the tribe of Benjamin who wanted Saul to be king. So now they see that when Shlomo mentions David's name, only then do the gates fling open. Then all of Israel knew that God had forgiven David for that sin. Notice the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't say he didn't sin. There's a Gemara in Tractate Sanhedrin that people like to quote. The Gemara says, "Kol ha'omer David chatai no ela toeh." Whoever says King David sinned is not none other than error in error. But here, that's not what the Gemara says. It says God forgave him for the sin, and it's worthwhile to note that the Gemara doesn't say al oto chet. Chet is a sin that's done in error. Rather, the Gemara says, "Aloto avon." Avon is a willful sin. So isn't King Solomon right in saying, I praise those that have passed? Because in his own merits, the gates wouldn't open. It was only when he mentioned his father David's merits. That's what the verse says. It says that on the eighth day, King Solomon sent everyone home, and everyone went back to their tents, happy, feeling content over all the good that God had done for David, his servant, and Israel, his people. They went to their tents and were happy. What's the tent? What's the tent a code for in Judaism? Their wives. Right? When, how do we know the Jewish people had a mitzvah to procreate? You guys go back to your tents. So why is the tent the mitzvah of procreating? Because what does the word ohel mean? Ohel means to give light. The sun is called Yahel. The sun gives light. So they went back to their tents happy. They came back home and found their wives pure. They could be together. Smechim, why were they happy? They enjoyed being in God's presence. Vitovelev, they had a good heart. What does that mean? Shenitabru neshotehen shel kol echad ve'yalda zachar. Every woman got pregnant that night. So
they had a son.
Right. Isn't that interesting? So that means 9 months later, let's think about it. Where were we then? Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Tevis, Shvat, Adar, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan. Shavuos. That year you had a lot of deliveries. The average woman was giving birth that year, Shavuos. Al kol ha-tova asher asah Hashem le-David avdo shemachalo al oto avon. All the good that God did to David, because now it was known that God had forgiven him. Ve-li-Yisrael amo da'achalu avon yom kippurim. And what was the good that they were celebrating that happened to Israel? That God had forgiven them for Yom Kippur. What needed to be forgiven for Yom Kippur? Because when Solomon inaugurated the temple, so they celebrated 7 days and 7 days. 7 days prior to Sukkot, and then 7 days of Sukkot. Well, 7 days prior to Sukkot also encompasses Yom Kippur. That means on Yom Kippur they were partying. That year on Yom Kippur everyone was eating and drinking. King Solomon made a special ruling. This year, as part of the celebration of the inauguration of the temple, we are all going to eat and drink on Yom Kippur for 7 days. That means they celebrated Rosh Hashanah, and then another 7 days that ran up to Sukkot. Yeah.
10 days.
Rosh Hashanah is Aleph and maybe Beis. So their celebration started on Zion. Okay. So here they were forgiven for that sin that they ate on Yom Kippur. That's interesting. Was it a sin? It's like a sin.
A king can do that.
Not a king, but a prophet can do that. And anyways, he had a source for it. The Talmud in Tractate Moed Katan discusses where he knew this from, that he was allowed to do this.
Where did he know it from?
When we get to Moed Katan, we'll see.
With
Kamal Shlomo ki lakelev chayu tov min ha'ariya mit, that which King Solomon said, that a living dog is better than a dead lion. What did he mean by that? Kedamar v'yudam ha'rav, ma'y dichtiv odiyeni Hashem kitzir midat yamay ma'yi edam echadel ani. What does it mean? King David says in one of the chapters of Psalms, in chapter 39, he says, God, let me know my days. I want to know how long I'm going to live. I want to know when I'm going to end my time. Amar David livnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. David said to God, Ribono Shlam, Odieni Hashem Kitzi. God, I want to know how long I'm going to live. Amar lo gzirai milifanai shen modiin kitzo shel basav adam. God says, I've made a decree. We don't let people know how long they're going to live. Sorry, no. We're going to notice that King David gets a lot of no's from heaven. You see it overtly in the verses, and in Chazal you see it a lot. Umidat yamai mahi. So King David says, okay, if you're not going to tell me what's coming in my life, so at least tell me what year, how many years I'm going to live. Midat yamai, how many years, how long, to what age am I going to get to? Gzerai milifanai shen modin midat yamav shel adam. God says, no, I've made a decree. I don't let people know to what age they're going to live. So he said, okay, God, so tell me, what day of the week am I going to die on? Amalo b'Shabbat tamut. So God tells David, you're going to die on Shabbos. So David says, Amut b'Echad b'Shabbat. God, can I die on a Sunday? Because he figured if I die on Shabbos, then on Shabbos, no one will be able to deal with me. And on Matzei Shabbos, they're going to have to bury me. Who's going to make it to the funeral? No one. So can you make it on a Sunday so that people will be able to attend, so that I'll have a funeral and a hesped the way I should? So God says, no. Notice he keeps getting no's. He got one yes. God told him which day of the week.
That makes sense. Only Moshe was talking face to face. So he would ask a question and then some sort of a dream like, he would get a response.
Right.
If may live up to 120. If Shimon Peres passed away, I won't say Shabbat, he'd get people. I sure think that he would get people.
In those days, it was more complicated until you got word out.
Of all the things to worry about, I'm not going to get a lot of people. I don't know.
It
seems so strange. Anyway, I don't know.
I'm not sure, because David had to be very concerned what message is going to pass to future generations. He had an issue with his succession, but he also had an issue with what message will future generations get from him. You know, he spent his whole life concerned about the Chilul Hashem of what happened with Bathsheba. So God says, I can't let you live till Sunday, because on that point in Shabbos, your son Shlomo is supposed to be king. One of the rules in heaven is we don't let one ruler touch even a hair width of the next ruler. So there's an exact time when he's supposed to be king and an exact time to when you could be king. Amut be'erev Shabbat. So David said, okay, I'm willing to die on a Friday. God says, no, I cherish every day with you in my gates rather than 1,000, meaning what? I prefer one day of you dealing in Torah rather than 1,000 offerings. King Solomon's going to offer 1,000 offerings a day, and God says, I prefer one day of your Torah to his 1,000 offerings. Okay, so David figures, I hear what's coming. Let me outdo this. Let me figure a way out. Kol yoma de Shabbata, havayati vegaris kol yoma. All day Shabbos. From that time onward, all year long, every Shabbos, all Shabbos long, David would just review his learning. He wouldn't stop learning for a minute. He'd be constantly reviewing the Mishnayos he knew. Hahu yoma de ba leminach nafshei, the day the Shabbos came, when he was supposed to pass away. So the angel of death came, and he couldn't approach David. Because David doesn't stop learning. Says, okay, what am I supposed to do to this guy? What am I supposed to do to him? King David had an orchard behind his house. So the angel of death went to the orchard and started shaking the trees. Nafak lemechse. So David goes to see if everything's okay. He's hearing a funny noise out in the back. He doesn't stop learning as he's walking out. Havisalik bedalga. He was walking down a step. Ifrit dalga mitute. So the step suddenly was made missing from beneath his foot. So he's stepping down, and suddenly the angel of death makes the step shift a little bit. Ishtik. So for a split second he lost his footing. So for a split second he stopped learning. V'nach nafshei, he dropped it. Okay. Shalach Shlomo lebei medrisha. So Solomon comes and he finds his father. Solomon is 12 years old. He's a very smart fellow. He's the new king. And he finds his father dead in the backyard. So now the question is, what's he supposed to do with the body? Shalach, so he sends word to the Beis Medrash, Abba met umutal bachama, dad has passed away, and his body is lying in the sun, it's not nice, v'klavim shel beit abba revim, and my father's dogs are hungry. Maya said, what am I supposed to do now? I guess he was never in charge of feeding the dogs. So he said, how do I feed the dogs? And what am I supposed to do with the body? Shalchule, so they sent word to him as follows. Chatoch nevelav anach lifnei haklavim. You can take any dead meat, meat that's not kosher, you know, you have a carcass of any animal, slice it up and give it to the dogs. Ve'avicha anach lav kikaro tinok v'talteron. And your father put a loaf of bread on him, or put a baby on him, and then you could move the body, because you're using the body as a means of moving the loaf of bread. So that's how you could move the body. V'lo yafeh amar Shlomo, so King Solomon was shocked because he saw two things that were shocking here. Number one, they answered him first about feeding the dogs. You'd think the king dies, you'd answer him about the king first. No, the dogs are hungry, here's how you feed them. So that was number one that shocked him. He had asked them in the reverse order. He had said, my father died and his body's in the sun, and the dogs are hungry. They reversed the answer. They said, go feed the dogs if the dogs are hungry.
Right.
Right. That's a good question. It could be. The Talmud says that when the angel of death comes to the city, so the dogs that are in the vicinity go wild. So it could be that there was a set servant who came at a set time and fed the dogs. But Solomon's coming out to see his father, and suddenly he hears all the dogs howling. Now he figured they must be hungry. So that's one interpretation that's offered here. So that's why he thought, hey, I guess someone didn't show up on time. You notice his humility. He doesn't say, hey, there are servants that can deal. He says, okay, the dogs are hungry, I got a deal. So that was one thing. And the second thing that struck Shlomo was that on behalf of the dogs, he could just take up mukta meat that's really not edible for human consumption, and bring it to the hungry dogs. But for his father, who's no longer living, he can't just move him. So wasn't Solomon accurate in saying that a living dog is better than a dead lion? His father is the dead lion, and he can't move him without putting a piece of bread on it. And now, notice Rav Tanchum from the city of Noi, notice his humility, and he says, and regarding the question I asked you, he didn't ask them, they asked him. But out of humility, he doesn't want to say, and the question you guys asked me, as though he's the big shot. He says, and the question I asked you, the question that I asked before you, ner kuya ner v'nishmato shel adam kuya ner. Well, a lamp is called a ner, and a soul is called a ner, right? Ner Hashem nishmat adam. Mutav tichbe ner shel basar v'adam mipnei nero shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's better that the human lamp be extinguished then God's lamp be extinguished. Being that we have a choice, the guy's going to die if you don't put out the light. So the lamp is the human being's lamp. You have a physical lamp, put it out, and don't let the man die, because a man is God's lamp. So why didn't he just say, it's pikuach nevesh, fellows, you got to let the guy live. So put out the light. So the answer here is because he had people who were very not learned there. So he had to speak in a way that they would understand. So he spoke in a way that sounded logical to them. If he'd say, you know, human life is so precious, they'd say, how precious? And so he said, okay, it's a lamp. It's God's lamp. We cherish it. If you have two lamps, so put out the human lamp and cherish God's lamp. Leave the man alive. So that's the conclusion of his speech. And here we start seeing where our agadot come from, where Chazal would encase their answers in a stories and broad descriptions in order to pass on so many messages, like the idea that David HaMelech was forgiven, the idea that no one knows how long they're going to live. Notice he taught them the laws of muktzeh. You can't move a dead body without putting a loaf of bread or a baby on it. He taught them the laws of feeding an animal. He taught them that you feed the animal before you deal with the corpse. He taught them a lot of halachos as he was talking and telling a story. But in passing through the story, he gave them many halachot. That's why he didn't answer them head on. They came and asked him, can we put out a lamp for someone who's terminally ill? And he didn't answer. He said, well, let's start talking about this, right?
Beautiful finish. He starts with socks. And he said, alluding the same thing. He's speaking to his audience. And he said, speaking to the audience. He's not saying what he really thinks necessarily.
Yes, let's talk, but let's let everyone